Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an inside and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 111, I thought it was 110, but you corrected me.
I'm pretty sure it's 111. We may have misspoke last week.
111 is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So we are broadcasting from beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia on Memorial Day.
It is actually Monday, Memorial Day. So typically our podcast comes out today, but since we didn't have any staff in the hospital to post it for us, we decided that we would record it and then it would post
on a Tuesday. So happy late Memorial Day to everyone. Hope you all have enjoyed a long weekend. It is weird. All of a sudden, the world is back to normal, it feels like. And so I hope that we can get through this Memorial Day weekend and not have any major outbreaks or whatever you would call it, effects after everybody getting together over this past weekend in the form of COVID-related illness or deaths. So I think if we can get by this, that we're golden.
Yes.
So, thoughts?
No, the only thing is we did honor or mention that it was Memorial Day, so I did want to take 1 second and just to honor those military and military personnel who have died, obviously, to help us keep our freedom and obviously and be here and be worried about COVID and how we are going to, quote unquote, return to normal and that kind of thing. So thank you all.
Yes. And so for those military personnel and really for also the local personnel that keep us safe and sound, it's not just about being a war veteran or being a dead war veteran. It's about the job you do. And so we have several clients that I'm aware of who are currently involved in local police departments, and many of them do have a historical past of being associated in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, you know, thank you. Not trying to be corny, trying to be sincere in offering our thanks for everything that you have done and continue to do on a daily basis to help protect us and the country we live in. So
on a different note, but similar, and not to be disrespectful at all, but you know, Dr. Evans does treat some of the police dogs for Gwinnett County and that kind of thing. Do you ever think of what clients think when there is a cop car in the parking lot?
The truth is there's usually three or four.
Right. So do you ever think about like what clients are? They're like, should we come back for our appointment?
Yeah. Or we had an officer walk up maybe 10 days ago to the front door. So we're going to open up the lobby tomorrow.
Tuesday. Yep. 6-1.
But we had been curbside up until then. And so there was this just big old dude walked up to the front doors with his, you know, his hands down on his hips, kind of stand. And yes, was full garb, had the radio on, multiple guns.
They definitely wear lead vests now. So I think that's why they look so thick and bulky.
I mean, they're
big dudes anyways, most of them. But
so he walked up and I was like, I was checking out a client, talking to a client in the parking lot. And I walked back up to go inside and I see him standing there and I'm like, can I help you, officer?
And I'm like, did you feel like you were doing something wrong?
I was like, what is going on? Because usually the canine cops, right? I mean, their units are marked, mm-hmm. and they travel in pairs. The other day, there were four of them here.
Mm-hmm.
There was two on the side of the building, two up front. I'm like, oh my gosh, are we in lockdown? What is going on?
Yeah.
But this officer looked at me very sternly and said, yes, I need to get some medication for my dog. And so I said, well, come on in, sir. And so we got him taken care of. He needed some meds for his personal dog. And we walked out and I commented to one of my clients. I don't even know what the comment was, but she's like, well, yeah, it's a good thing it was not a professional visit. It was just a personal visit.
Yeah.
So, but yes, to your point, yes.
So I've always wondered, like, if clients, you know, how do they feel? Do they feel like, oh, how cool that my practice, you know,
I think they think, what in the world's going on at
exactly.
that place?
I think so, too. I think everyone naturally just kind of resorts to, like, oh, do they have a bad client? Or someone, like, you know, cause a disruption or disturbance? Did they have to call the cops on someone? Granted, the lights are never flashing, thank goodness. But they are usually sitting in the cars or sitting in the parking lot, and the cars are never turned off.
So
that is
go,
one thing about cop cars.
Let's come back to that, to the four cop car scenario the other day. But before that, I was at Lowe's buying some flowers to put up front and inside the hospital the
Very
other day.
Very spring-like.
4 or 5 days
yeah.
ago. And I saw something I've never seen before at Lowe's. You know what that was?
A cop?
It was cop-related. I went in the entrance door to the Lowe's in Suwanee. So flower garden, then you have the entrance door, then you have the exit door, then you have lumber, right,
uh-huh.
left, right.
Yeah,
so go in the entrance door. I get whatever I'm getting, and I walk out the exit door, and I'm walking back towards my car, and there are some police lights going off that catch my eye right before you get to the entrance door. And I look over, and just as I look over, there is a man handcuffed with hands behind his back being escorted into the back of the police car.
Oh, my gosh.
And there's another police truck behind him. And so I'm trying to be like cool, right? I'm like not going to gawk and look, but
yeah.
I really want to know what's going on. And I can't really see what the guy looks like before he gets in the car. I'm not sure why that matters, but all these things are going through my mind. Was he shoplifting? Was he illegally in the country? You know, what did this guy do to have two Suwanee police officers catch him at Lowe's? And to this day, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it probably didn't make the news that night.
But never have seen that before at a home improvement store. So back to the four cop.
Well, do you see people being escorted out of other stores and loaded into the back of police cars? I mean, it's rare.
I mean, it is rare.
Okay,
probably, so. Yeah, but not at Lowe's at 11 o'clock in the morning. You wouldn't think so.
Okay,
so
anyway.
So the other day we had two canine police vehicles on the side of Russell Ridge. We had two up front. I think we had two, I'm going to say dog units. I don't really know what they call them, inside the building. And I'm leaving out to lunch. And again, I'm wondering what in the world is going on. So I call Dr. Evans and she's like, oh no, I'm just taking care of a couple of canines here. So when I got back, I asked her, or I commented, I said, well, when I left out, there were the two SUVs pulled over off the curb under the grass. And I thought they were broken down. They had their hoods up.
They had their hoods up?
And, yeah, so you don't know what that means either.
No, and I didn't see them with their hoods
because
up.
Because I almost stopped and said, Officer, do y'all
need
some help?
Assistance?
But I'm like, they're going to think I'm being a smart ASS, and they're going to throw me in jail or something. So I didn't.
How funny.
But she said, oh, yeah, all the canine units, they have to keep the vehicles running. And in order to keep the vehicle from overheating, they raise the hood.
That's okay. So does your vehicle overheat?
Vehicles will overheat if they're left to idle for a long time, because revving the engine and the fan, it keeps the engine cool. And so the same thing happens at the Gwinnett Braves, the Stripers now, the stadium. That cop car that sits on the little median before you turn in.
Yeah,
he has his hood up.
Yeah.
And it's because his car is running and he does not want it to overheat.
That's so interesting. You think that they would, like, fix the paneling or
something.
On a police car. That's so weird. Because, you know, they can't see out the window if they're sitting in there. I always thought
at the Stryper Stadium, he parks on an angle so he can see.
Super interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, again, I'm like, they're broken down. Why are these two cops over here right next to the clinic? What's going on? They act like nothing's really happening. They're not acting like there's anything urgent. And they were just hanging out waiting on their other two guy dudes.
So if you were a layperson and you pulled into your veterinary hospital and you saw four cop cars,
would
you get out of your car and walk up to the door like, ain't nothing happening, I'm just here for my 2:30 appointment with my dog Skippy? You know,
probably either leave the parking lot or
I'd call the front desk and be like, is it okay if I come in?
Is it safe to come in?
Yeah, so weird.
So yeah, it's awesome that we're involved with Gwinnett County Police Department, Sheriff's Department as well, I think. But it can be intimidating.
Likewise, so we do sometimes we will vet some of the pets that are, or animals, I guess, that are picked up off of the side of the road by animal control officers.
Mm-hmm.
And it has always crossed my mind what clients think when they see an animal control truck here also. Do they think that we are shipping pets off versus like treating them?
Because they have the quote unquote dog box type trucks, right?
With they have the big square
enclosures back in there. So I would agree. It's a little bit odd, I guess, that they're in your parking lot. But the black and white Ford Explorers or whatever they're driving, Chevrolet Suburbans.
The animal control?
No, the canine cops.
Oh, yeah,
those are a little more intimidating.
Yes, for sure. But I'm just saying, like, as a client...
What if there were, like, four fire trucks out front or four ambulances? That would take it to a different level.
Fire trucks... Again, if lights are off, I don't know. I would think more festival.
We've had a fire truck in the parking lot.
If there are four ambulances, I would be concerned.
I would
be very concerned.
So we have had a fire truck in the parking lot before. And
is it ambulances?
Do what?
Is it ambulances?
It is ambulances, yes.
Okay.
Not ambuli. We've had a fire truck come because one of our clients, probably 10, 12 years ago, she actually was a skunk owner, and I was her skunk, or her skunks, not her skunk vet. I was her skunk's veterinarian, and she came in to get some medicine one day, one summer afternoon, and inadvertently locked her car, her vehicle, and there was a skunk inside, and she completely panicked. So much so, she asked me to come break the window of her Jaguar, and I went out. I could not find a hammer. I got the biggest rock I could find, and I tried to bash the backseat little bitty triangular window. I hit it like three times. My hands got all, not that cut up, but they kind of got abraded. And I'm like, this is ridiculous, Robin. We're not going to do this. The fire department's right over here. So we call the fire department. Within 5 minutes, big fire truck comes, pulls in, takes over the entire parking lot, unlocks her car, saved the day and saved the skunk. So
while we're having reminiscent stories in the fire department, so I remember when we called 911 on a client, in exam room one, we had a client.
Do I know this story or not?
Have an active seizure. You should. Active seizure. She used to have a little what is it?
Chinese, like
a
powder puff crested.
Chinese crested.
Yeah.
So she would come in and visit, and I did not know she had like a seizure disorder, epilepsy,
right.
But we were treating the dog, and she had a full-blown grand mal seizure in the exam room, and we called 911, and the ambulance came and picked her up, and the fire truck came to the parking lot, and of course they needed to assess her and all these kinds of things. Big to-do. Yeah, they came and examined her in exam room one, and then escorted her to the hospital. We held the dog here for a while until her daughter came, and then we had to have a big giant conversation after the fact that this happens and we probably shouldn't have called 911 for her.
Yeah, but we panicked.
It's a very scary thing. I felt kind of like a client would when they see their dog having a seizure, like just paralyzed, like, oh my word, what do I do?
Absolutely.
Well,
my daughter has had seizure disorder since she was a brief infant, whatever I'm trying to say there. It does take it to a different level when it's a person, but dogs are super scary because I've had our first and second pet that we ever owned, English Mastiffs, had seizure disorder as well. So,
Dogs, I mean, it's scary no matter what, because literally there's nothing you can do for them, right? You can't. Dogs are scary because they sometimes can get aggressive after. And
I'm having a flashback because within the last week I had this discussion with one of my clients, and I can't remember who or what the circumstance, but
in regards to their pet having a seizure,
their pet, and the only thing worse than your pet is whenever it's your human infant, your two-legged pet, if you will. So idiopathic epilepsy is what we see most commonly in the veterinary world. Idiopathic meaning we don't know the cause. Epilepsy is just, I guess, to describe the seizure.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very common in dogs that are 6 to 24 months of age. And we never figure out why they have seizures, but we can control them with medications.
Yeah.
And so,
and we've talked about seizures on the podcast before, but do you also remember we've talked about blue-green algae and the toxins?
Oh, gosh, summer's coming. Here we go. Year three.
So interesting that I, of course, in preparation for things to talk about on the podcast and kind of what's current and what's happening, I realized that even back in March, there were dogs, you know, miraculously or strangely dying after swimming in this lake in Texas. And the comment was that the lake did not appear to be cloudy or have algae apparent, but these dogs died within 30 minutes after swimming.
Blue-green algae toxicity?
So they went back out and they had the county or somebody test the waters, and of course there was blue-green algae or cyanotoxin there. But I just think it's interesting because that comment and the reason I bring it up is because it doesn't have to be a green, nasty water. It doesn't have to be.
It usually just floats next to the shoreline and you don't even notice it or see it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like a top floating.
But my point is that the people who let their 6-month-old dog swim in this Burton Lake or Lake Burton or something like that, Beltron, in Texas, they were like, the water looked clear.
I think it's Lake Burton around Austin, I believe.
I believe
Could
you're right.
Could be wrong, but that's what my Texas previous history.
But anyways, kind of changing things from the things that we've talked about in the past, right? So seizures and idiopathic epilepsy to cyanotoxin and that kind of thing. But yeah, summer is coming. Dogs are hot. Be very, very careful if you're going to let your dog swim in a body of water that's not a backyard pool.
So now's a good time to, you know, kind of go into the healthy pet, happy life. Monthly preventatives in our case. So heartworm prevention, which takes care of and what we recommend, which is Sentinel Spectrum. Also in that product is a prevention to take care of, so I guess it's a dewormer, to take care of whipworms, hookworms, roundworms, and tapeworms. Also kind of the, as we like to call it, birth control for fleas, but ticks and fleas are about to be a big deal. In fact, the last couple of weeks, ticks have already become a big deal in Georgia.
I have a funny tick story. At least I think it's funny.
Okay, go for it.
So I was doing an exam in exam room one. We have 4 exam rooms for those that don't know. And exam room one is the closest to my desk and the closest to the doctor's office. I don't know why, but it's also probably one of the most used exam rooms here. But anyways, I was doing an exam with Dr. Merrill Reese in exam room one. And it was a cat who was coming in for their annual exam with the doctor and needed to boost one vaccine and get some annual blood work done. And I talked to the owner and discussed with them like the products that we recommend, like Revolution. And they said, oh no, we have one indoor cat. This cat is indoor outdoor and we had another outdoor cat and he kind of ran away. So we have enough. And I was like, oh, okay. So they declined it at the time. So we are examining this pet. And the pet also needed a fecal. So we're examining the cat.
Pause.
Yes.
Fecal.
Stool sample.
Okay. Fecal parasite test.
Fecal exam, yes.
Okay, thank you. Continue.
So we're examining the cat. Dr. Reese is looking head to tail, you know, that kind of thing. And we are obtaining temperatures these days by the ear so that we're not stressing pets out and we're not grossing clients out, although the client wasn't in the room with us at this time. We had done everything, and then I was like, oh, gosh, I forgot a stool sample. If this cat's indoor-outdoor, the client is definitely not going to want to, you know, chase the cat around outside and collect a stool sample. So let's just see if we can obtain one using a fecal loop. So I lifted the tail base, and there is a giant tick attached to the cat's anus.
Wow.
And it really caught me off guard. So we had to have the conversation with the client that even if you have Revolution – you're using it, maybe it's not working for this cat and you should consider Bravecto.
Or
Revolution Plus. If he's indoor, outdoor, maybe you should consider, you have to catch him once and apply it and it'll last for 3 months and that kind of thing. So,
Joanna would be so proud.
Super interesting.
You, like,
I know.
Pushing the Bravecto product.
For the feline product. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, that was my tick story. And I have a picture of it, so maybe we'll post it on the podcast.
So 2 weeks or thereabouts ago, we were looking at, I think it was a dog, but it could have been a cat. on the treatment table next to the surgery one and two. And I did a very similar thing. I picked, I think it was a tail again. I picked the tail up and I heard this, which was a thump or a thud. And I looked down on the treatment table and there is a jelly bean size engorged tick that just fell off of that animal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's weird. We're mild today. We've been 72 to 75 all weekend. It was super hot, I think, last weekend. You know, we have rain, we have heat, we have mildness. It's all over the place.
And now we have activity.
Yeah. So, ticks are upon us.
I do want to just comment real quick. It was really funny. So Dr. Reese removed the tick from the cat's anus and just looks at it. And she was like, oh, brown dog tick. And just like... It just some of the knowledge she has is so funny.
Rhipicephalus sanguineus, brown dog tick.
So
Dr. Reese did research the 6 feet apart, and can you expound on that?
Yeah, let me find the comments because it is escaping my mind at the moment.
There was some science behind that. It was all about air droplets and when people sneeze or cough. And my recollection is 6 feet was kind of the average that you should be safe because most things were transmitted within like 5.5 feet, but other organisms were transmitted as far as 9, 10 feet.
So my understanding is that it's there's a study, so essentially 2 meters or 6 feet, done by the British Medical Journal article.
Back in...
1897, I guess. Yeah, so it's a study of how droplets are emitted during speech and more forcibly when coughing or sneezing. So yes, there was some study obviously there, and that is where the 2 feet the 6 feet of the 2 meters came from. Okay. So thanks, Dr. Reese, for that, and you know, our tick identification.
So back to GVA news, we mentioned the lobby is going to be opening up June 1st, which is tomorrow, Tuesday. We're going to kind of go back to business as usual. Masks are optional for staff and clients, depending on their situation.
We are, again, not going to, we're going to rely on the CDC's guidelines, but we're not going to start asking people for vaccine cards.
Right.
So the word optional makes it seem like we don't really care, and it's not that we don't care. We hope that people are responsible and
discretion.
Respectful enough that they're going to follow those guidelines themselves. Everyone should know what they are.
I wonder who came up with, have you seen one of the, I don't have it in my wallet, one of the vaccine cards?
I have seen pictures of them, yeah.
They're bigger than your wallet. They're bigger than a business card. You have to bend them over.
Yeah.
So whoever the brilliant person was that designed the vaccine card.
They're like
card,
a 4x4 square.
They're too big.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that?
You're so silly.
It's ridiculous. So, okay, we had nothing to talk about, but we're getting kind of deep in the podcast. We need to wind it up pretty quick. So real quick, let's touch on some news stories.
Okay.
So when the pandemic hit and we started talking about all the new pets that were being adopted coming into families or being purchased, whatever the case may be, there was concern that once the pandemic was over, which it's not quite there yet, that many of these pets would be given up. And thus far, that has not held to be true. So most people are continuing to own or keep their pets.
Mm-hmm.
With very few being rehomed. And I think it's a very good step.
Fantastic. It's a super encouraging thing that largely most of the dogs that were adopted are remaining in their new homes. I think still time will tell with the whole puppies, right? So we have seen some really terrible puppies, and I don't know why. Specifically, some of them are breed specific, right? So
lack of socialization, humanization of the pet, and breed related are the top three things in my opinion.
So, but my point being is that these dogs that are adopted, hopefully as an adult from a shelter or something like that, they had to have been adoptable in the first place. And so I would attribute that hopefully as to being a huge reason as to why they're staying in their homes. Now, granted, if you get a new puppy, whether you buy it from a breeder or you get it somewhere else, if it's a terror, you we'll see. We had a, I don't know, 8-week-old Rottweiler puppy in that definitely has not had any socialization. We had to go super slow with it because it wanted to literally eat us. It was so fearful.
Yeah. Fight or flight kind of thing.
So, yeah, I mentioned to one of the other technicians who's much younger than me and will probably be doing this a lot longer than I will be doing this in the future. But I was like, great, you know, this is what we have to look forward to for the next 10 years,
10 to 15 years, yeah,
in veterinary medicine. So we need to get really, really comfortable with handling this in a slow
behavioral issues. Yeah.
You can't just strong arm pets like that are afraid. And of course we don't believe in that anyways here, but
so here's another little twist on the whole, you know, pet population and shelters, and it's all about supply and demand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So during the pandemic, the demand met up with, if not exceeded, the supply. And so what we have started seeing here locally in our practices is, I was going to say many is maybe not the right word, but several clients who have no idea what the dog breeding industry or business is about, all of a sudden, they want to start breeding these pandemic pups.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's monetary issues. I don't know if it's a...
boredom, something to do.
Tarzan kind of a thing. I'm sitting here beating
pride?
My, you
know, I don't know what that means.
Is it a male? You know, why are we wanting to bring more pets into the world? So I don't know that there are enough of our clients that are going to create another oversupply of pets that restocks the shelters, but there's going to be some that contribute to it. So we'll kind of have to wait and see there. Most of the time, breeders, whether they're quote-unquote backyard breeders or however else you want to label them, most of the time they get in over their head and don't understand the husbandry quite enough to prevent disease and other problems from happening within their litter. So I think that's a kind of another problem waiting to happen.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought there were two other stories, but I guess the only other story I thought was interesting was Greek dog owners protest mandatory sterilization of pets. And so somewhere in Greece, they have introduced a bill to, I guess, mandate that all pets be sterilized.
Household.
And there were...
So household pets. Like, I guess unless you claim or, like, establish your dog as, like, a working animal or something like that, then yeah, they need to be sterilized. So
there were a couple of hundred people that showed up on the footsteps of Parliament and protested that. So
I'm kind of at like I agree and I disagree, right? So I feel like I don't feel like it should be a law that you have to alter your pet, but I do think that you should have to have responsibility for your pet. And so if they're think about a large breed dog, right? If they have a litter of 12 to 14 pups, those now become your responsibility. So why would you want to do that?
So I think the pet overpopulation problem is kind of in a stalled mode right now. But if it becomes a big problem again, I think the Greeks are absolutely on track with a way to prevent that from happening. So if you have a pet... And you want to breed it, or you don't want to quote unquote alter it, sterilize it.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to pay $1,000 a year, that would be kind of a significant licensing fee, and it would make you kind of responsible for that pet. Next year rolls around, you don't want to breed it, you're okay with sterilizing it to not pay that $1,000. You would. That would keep a lot of these pets that are running around unaltered from being out there with testicles and uteruses.
Yeah, I think it's a little deeper than that, but I get your point.
That's just a thought process. If you are going to breed pets, you have to pay a licensing fee as well. So obviously it's not an
easy. Yeah, it's definitely, none of that is very well regulated here in the States, right? So in the county that we live in, you don't even have to certify your pet with the county and prove that it has a vaccine.
Rabies vaccine,
current.
Yeah.
So there are some counties in the state of Georgia that are doing better than ours. There are some that are doing much worse because their animal welfare is not nearly as up to par with what we've got here in Gwinnett County either. So it is never going to be 100%.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to discuss? Or?
Well, there's one other thing that I just thought was interesting. So VMG sends out a fountain report.
Yep.
You know, and so I kind of read through it every once in a while. And basically the fountain report is just little snippets of articles. And they've, you know, pulled through the headlines, or they've pulled through pieces that they think that will, you know, obviously let you know briefly what's going on, or you can go
nationwide
and read more.
And worldwide stories on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Right?
And they're companion animal, they're food production animal, industry specific, whatever. So one of them, most recently, was that the FDA is basically trying to ensure that there aren't medication errors at the human pharmacies for pet medications. And I clicked through it, right? You can call it clickbait if you will. But we've talked about on the podcast before how we, especially in our practices, we try to really be competitive with online pharmacies and those local pharmacies so that people continue to get their pet medications from us, right? Most pharmacists, when they go to pharmacy school, they are not trained on animal medications. So they don't necessarily understand. So one of the examples that I was going to mention, and again, we don't typically write a lot of prescriptions that people take to human pharmacies. Most of them are going to be taken to other pet pharmacies. But there is an example that the FDA put, and it's at the FDA.gov website, but there's an example where a veterinarian called in a verbal prescription for Xenaquin or Marbofloxacin. I'm assuming they used Xenaquin as the name. And asked if, you know, approved a generic if okay, and the pharmacist misinterpreted the order for Cinequan, S-I-N-E-Q-U-A-N.
What's that?
Which is apparently doxepin, D-O-X-E-P-I-N, which is
a
product that's used to treat depression and anxiety in humans. And so this pet was prescribed an anxiety medication
for
humans,
an yeah.
yeah, for an infection. And so the article goes on to say, like, there are things that the pet owner can do to ensure that this doesn't happen, and then certainly there are things that the veterinarian can do, but really also the pharmacist as well. If they're not comfortable taking phone orders or that kind of thing, then they need to mandate that things are written in. And I think honestly there's a lot of lax actually between veterinary world and human world and the human pharmacies, right? So like, when's the last time you took a piece of paper to your pharmacy to get a prescription filled? They don't do
years.
It. It's very technologically advanced, right? So they send that prescription right from the doctor's office before you even leave. So I think that would be a way too, that we could kind of mitigate some of that if it went right from the veterinarian's hands to the pharmacy. But anyways, the idea of it is hopefully to continue getting your medications directly from the source, and that would be your vet's office. Because there are mistakes that do happen. It is human error. We are all humans. There's no AI in pharmacy at this moment.
Yeah, we veterinarians tend to quote-unquote blame human pharmacists, but I do think some of that blame comes back on us for not being clear.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit different when you do send the piece of paper with it written out, you know, with the client,
mm-hmm.
Which that's what we actually try to do here for clarity.
Yeah.
Just to minimize mistakes. But I had a conversation actually yesterday with the pharmacist about this, and I asked her, you know, are y'all seeing an uptick in veterinary prescriptions? Is it about the same? And she said, oh, it's about the same as it always has been.
Yeah.
And I thought that kind of made sense because the competition, I'm going to call it, for pharmacy in the veterinary world is not really as much the local pharmacist as it is the internet pharmacies.
Yeah, it's not a Walgreens or a CVS or a Kroger pharmacy.
It's Chewy
and 1-800-PetMeds.
Yeah, Pet Pets is, I don't even hear about them anymore.
I don't really either.
And then Foster's and Smith got bought and they went away.
Yeah, they're gone. So there used to be like Ally Vet and some of these other places, and I don't really see or hear anything about that either. Chewy has truly dominated the market in that regard.
Completely dominated. So yesterday I walked in and I'm like, oh my gosh, what in the world have we ordered from Chewy?
Oh.
We had 10 boxes back in treatment. We had 8 boxes up front.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, it's cat litter. And I just kind of chuckled and said, oh, we are killing them. They're losing money on us on shipping.
Yeah. So the thing is about the cat litter is we definitely order it because it's so easy. Yeah. So the other boxes that you saw, quite frankly, were Sam's Club boxes back in treatment.
They were. You're right.
And so finally, Sam's Club will deliver cases of water. So think about this, right? The manpower it takes to go to the store, load up your cart with 20-pound bags of cat litter.
It's the convenience factor.
Or 40-pound bags of cat litter, right?
Clients will order off the internet. Yes.
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 So it's super.
It's price, but it's convenience.
It's super convenient for us as a practice because now we don't have to pay someone to go to the store and load their cart and then load their car and then walk it down the hill and put it away here at the hospital.
Yeah.
We order it and it gets here and we put it away.
But cat litter has got to be a loss leader for Chewy.
I would hope so.
I mean, it's $4 or $5 a bag.
It's actually $10 right now.
Oh, we should be getting it from Walmart then.
We spend $60 a month in cat litter here.
That's
at this one hospital.
Well,
yes.
It's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
It's not bad. Okay.
Nope.
All right. Well, let's wish everybody a happy Memorial or post-Memorial Day weekend. Hope everybody got back safe and sound. Enjoyed a little bit of time off.
Yeah. Had a long weekend, hopefully, for most.
Yep.
Check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. I'll make sure to put the anus tick cat photo.
The anus tick cat. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cat anus with a tick on it photo on our People, Pets, and
anus
Vets Instagram.
Cat tick.
And please
ACT.
Do follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. You can certainly get our podcast on our website, but wherever you're getting it from, just go ahead and hit subscribe or download. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.